This is the 11th day of July, 2006, chapter 1 of the Bhagavad Gita as it is, text number 15. Okay. Pantajanyam Rishikesho Devadattam Dhananjayaha Paundram Dadmao Mahashankam Bhima Karma Vikrodaraha Panchajanyam Rishikesho Devadattam Dhananjayaha Paundram Dadma Mahashankam Bhima Karma Vikrodaraha Panchajanyam Rishikesho Devadattam Dhananjayaha Paundram Dadma Mahashankam Bhima Karma Vrikodaraha Panchajanyam Rishikesho Devadattam Dhananjayaha Paundram Dadmao Mahashankam Bhima Karma Vrikodaraha Panchajanyam Rishikesho Devadattam Dhananjayaha Paundram Dadmao Mahashankam Bhima Karma Vrikodaraha Someone else? Panchajanyam, the conch shell named Panchajanya, Rishika Isha, Rishikesh, Krishna, the Lord who directs the senses of the devotees, Devadattam, the conch shell named Devadatta, Dhananjaya, Arjun, the winner of wealth, Paundram, the conch named Paundra, Dadmao, blue, Mahashankam, the terrific conch shell, Bhima Karma, one who performs Herculean tasks. Vrika Udara, the voracious eater. Bhima. Lord Krishna blew his conch shell, called Panchajanya. Arjun blew his, the Devadatta. And Bhima, the voracious eater and performer of Herculean tasks, blew his terrific conch shell, called Paundra. Purport. Lord Krishna is referred to as Rishikesh in this verse because he is the owner of all senses. The living entities are part and parcel of him, and therefore the senses of the living entities are also part and parcel of his senses. The impersonalists cannot account for the senses of the living entities, and therefore they are always anxious to describe all living entities as senseless or impersonal. The Lord, situated in the hearts of all living entities, directs their senses, but he directs in terms of the surrender of the living entity. And in the case of a pure devotee, he directly controls the senses. Here on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the Lord directly controls the transcendental senses of Arjuna, and thus his particular name of Rishikesh. The Lord has different names according to his different activities. For example, his name is Madhusudana because he killed the demon of the name Madhu. His name is Govinda because he gives pleasure to the cows and to the senses. His name is Vasudev because he appeared as the son of Vasudev. His name is Devaki Nandana because he accepted Devaki as his mother. His name is Yashoda Nandana because he awarded his childhood pastimes to Yashoda at Vrindavan. His name is Partasarathi because he worked as a charioteer of his friend Arjuna. Similarly, his name is Rishikesha because he gave direction to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Arjuna is referred to as Dhananjaya in this verse because he helped his elder brother in fetching wealth when it was required by the king to make expenditures for different sacrifices. Similarly, Bhima is known as Vrikodara because he could eat as voraciously as he could perform Herculean tasks, such as killing the demon Hidimba. So the particular types of conch shell blown by the different personalities on the side of the Pandavas, beginning with the lords, were all very encouraging to the fighting soldiers. On the other side, there were no such credits, nor the presence of Lord Krishna, the supreme director, nor that of the goddess of fortune. So they were predestined to lose the battle, and that was the message announced by the sounds of the conch shells. Om Jnanantamarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Miditam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him. So the conch shell blowing is very auspicious, especially when it's blown by Krishna and Arjuna and Bhima. We also blow the conch, as you know, before every arti. Sometime you may hear, we have a special ceremonies and we'll have several conch shells blowing at the same time. You blow repeatedly during a kirtan. It's perfect. It's a nice touch, actually, to an extended kirtan. And you can feel the transcendental nature of the sound. It really penetrates the ether. And it is said in the arti, it's said to call attention to the Lord or whoever you're worshipping, to the impending arti. This is the purpose of blowing this conch. It also, of course, ends the arti. Now, this Poundra, or this Panchajanya, this comes from the demon named Panchajanya. After Krishna killed Kamsa, he underwent some study with the great teacher Sandipani Muni. And Krishna and Balaram both went to the school there in Ujjain, and they studied the 64 arts. There are 64 arts to be learned, and beginning with singing. And there's some wonderful arts. Floral arrangement is an art. Crossword puzzles is an art. Setting riddles is an art. How to set the hair is another art. There's 64 of these different arts. And Krishna learned each one of them. It usually takes months or years to learn them. He learned every one in one day. He and Balaram learned in one day. So after those 64 days, they graduated, as it were. And you commonly offer dakshina to the guru. It means some remuneration in appreciation of the knowledge taught. So what dakshina? Krishna had to give a special dakshina because he's a special student. Sandipani knew that. So he said, well, I have one son that was drowned in the ocean. And that son happens to be Madhu Mangal, by the way. And I'd like to get that son back. So since you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, see what you can do. So he went to the ocean where he had drowned, and he demanded that the ocean return this boy. The ocean came, personified, and came and said, well, I don't have him. He was swallowed up by this Panchajanya, the big conch demon. So Krishna drove in, killed the demon, but he didn't find the boy in the body of the conch, big conch. But he kept that conch, and that became Krishna's official conch. That's called as Panchajanya. It's like you have Krishna's own as Vasudev. He's the son of Vasudev. Notice that the long A is very significant. The fact that he's Vasudev means he's the son of Vasudev. So Panchajanya came from Panchajanya. Panchajanya is the, you know, the conch that was the external body, exoskeleton, if you will, of the Panchajanya demon. So that's not the end of the story. So Krishna didn't find Madhu Mangal out there, so he went to Yamaloka, and he blew that new conch shell, and Yama came to serve his master. Yama usually is the judge, but he knew that Krishna is ultimate master, and he asked him what he wanted and said, I want you to return this Madhu Mangal. So he brought the boy back to his spiritual master. What could be a better dakshinin than that, to return his dead son? So that's Panchajanya. Now the word Rishikesh is very significant. Here, it's the master of Arjuna's senses, but he's really the master of all of our senses. Rishika Isha. And Rishikesha Rishikena Sevanam Bhaktir Uchite. It is said that the definition of bhakti, one of the definitions of bhakti is Sarvopadi Vinu Muktam Tatpadatvena Limalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchite. It is said that bhakti, devotional service, is defined as follows. Sarva upadi vinimuktam. Now it's important to understand what these upadis are. As pure spirit soul, We are constitutionally servants of the Lord. We don't have a material body. We're in the spiritual kingdom of God in our spiritual body. When we turn away from the service of Krishna, we get a material body. It means the soul is now embedded within this material machine, and it keeps changing one after another. So the designations that we have as bodies, for instance, now we're human beings. That's a designation placed on the soul. But actually, the soul can be in the body of a dog, cat, ant, mosquito, plant, whatever. So that's one designation. And what kind of human being? Male, female, how old are we? What country we're born in? Who's our family? All of these different things. These are called upadis. These are designations placed upon the soul that really are superfluous. So when we become free of all these designations, sarva upadi vinu muktam, liberated, completely liberated, sarva upadi vinu tat paratmena nirvalam, being dedicated to Rishikesh, to the service of the Lord, nirmalam, become purified. This is a impurity placed on the soul when we have all of these designations. And what do? Rishikesha, Rishikena, Sevanam, Bhakti. Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam, Bhakti. With the senses, to serve the master of the senses. That's called bhakti. So when you think about it, everything that we do in devotional service involves the senses and the mind, which is said to be the sixth sense. Whatever we're doing, right? We're hearing now, you're hearing, I'm speaking, right? We're sitting, we're doing something with the hands, we're doing something with the eyes, see the deities, we chant, we hear. The senses are always involved. We're not trying to repress the senses. We're trying to dovetail the senses in the service of the Lord. And that's the very definition of bhakti. So this Rishikesh is a very important name of Krishna. When we really understand the meaning of it, then we understand what we're supposed to do with our senses. And then Arjuna is Devadatta. This is also a great conch shell, we can imagine. Poundra is very loud, you know, Bhima. Mahashankam, he's very big and heavy. Everything about Bhima is very powerful, is bigger, you know, he's great eater. It's described that he has a voracious appetite. This is why we have Nirjal Akadashi. I think it's Nirjal Akadashi because Bhima couldn't perform Akadashi. Akadashi is supposed to fast completely. So he couldn't do that. He said, okay, there's one Akadashi that if you just fast on that Akadashi, then it'll serve for the rest of them. That's Nirjal Akadashi. But he's not only Vrikodara. Vrikodara means voracious belly, a belly that eats everything. But he's also the performer of wonderful deeds, Herculean tasks. Herculean means, you know, Hercules, very powerful task. So when all these conch shells sounded, we'll see the result in the hearts of the enemy. They said, oh, we're finished. But just by hearing the sound of the conch shells, they were discouraged, because this is transcendental conch shells, powerful conch shells, it's destructive. So if there's no discussion, yes, Guru. Yeah. What that means is that they regard the very having senses, having a form, that itself is a sign of illusion or avidya. In other words, not account for it means that they cannot accept that there is such a thing as transcendental senses or transcendental sense activity. See, the whole problem with the impersonalists is that they have a false syllogism. The idea is this, that impersonalists, they're jnanis. The idea of impersonalists, they're jnanis. They cultivate knowledge. The basic element of knowledge is that we're not the body, we're spirit. We're pure spirit. And we're Brahman, right? One of the first things you learn if you're into learning Sanskrit at all, aham brahmasmi. You know what that means? Does anyone know what it means? Yes, seen? I am spirit. I am Brahman. Brahman in general means spirit. Now, para Brahman is the supreme spirit. That's Krishna. That's God. But we are also Brahman. I am Brahman. That means I am spirit, not matter. The body is clearly matter of various kinds. So that's like the first lesson, very important lesson. Aham Brahmasmi, right? So, now, what is our situation here? we're suffering. I'm spirit, but I'm tied to matter. I'm suffering because I'm attached to matter out of ignorance. I've forgotten my Brahman nature, and I'm identifying totally with matter. That's the upadis. I'm thinking, I am the body. I'm this old. I'm this gender. I'm American. I'm this, I'm that. This can have a whole list. That's our problem. So the Mayavadis say, okay, this form, any form, human form, animal form, it is a source of misery. The main misery, birth and death, old age and disease. No one can deny it. As soon as you get a material body, you have these pains. So the motivation of the Mayavadis is that we want to become free from this misery of birth and death. Therefore, we can't have a body because the body is mortal. It has a beginning and an end, gets sick, gets old. The whole problem is a body. So therefore, the perfection is to be situated purely in this realm of spirit and not to have a body, not to have senses, none of this variety. That's why we say nirvishesha. It's nice to meditate on, you know, what this pranam that we say to Prabhupada. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. So, Namaste Saraswati Deve. I offer my obeisances unto the disciple of Saraswati Goswami, the divine Saraswati, who is preaching or teaching the words of Lord Chaitanya. So they're not different from Krishna. If you compare the teachings, they're just varieties of the same thing. So, and what is the result of that? Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschata Deshatarine. So, remember I explained to you that if you want to try to unpack these compounds in Sanskrit, you start at the end. Always start at the end. So, this is one big, the last line is one big compound word. So, tarane is the same thing we have samsara dava natali loka tranaya. The word tranaya and tarane are related. It means to deliver. Delivering who? Paschatya desh. Paschatya means Western. Desha means land. The people of the Western lands, delivering the Western lands from these two things, nirvishesh and shunyavadi. Now, as soon as you hear this word vadi, we have shunyavadi, mayavadi. Vadi means to speak. It comes from the word vak. Vak is the name of Saraswati. That's one of her names, is vak. So when you can speak well, that means you're a pundit, you're a muni, then you're blessed by Saraswati. So vadi is someone who speaks a philosophy. And they're the Mayavad philosophy. Are there Mayavadis? So the Shunyavadis, the Shunyavadis are those who speak the philosophy of voidism. Shunya means void. These are the Buddhists and their descendants and varieties. Okay, and nihilists. Then there's the Mayavadis who say nirvishesh. So nirvishesh means no varieties. The ultimate goal is, for the Buddhists, shunya, voidism, nothing, to cease to exist. For the Mayavadis, it is to merge into the Brahman that has no varieties. There's no senses, there's nothing to do, there's no thought. It is simply pure existence. That's their ideal. But for the devotees, this is hell. This is hellish. We'd rather be in the material world than in Brahman, because at least here you can serve Krishna. You have a temple, you have deities, and so forth. Because you have senses. You see, you know this phrase, you ever hear this phrase, throwing out the baby with the bathwater? Yeah. I think the ladies have heard that one. Throwing out the baby with the bathwater. Yeah, so what it means is that you want to get rid of the bathwater. That's extra. That's waste. But you don't want to get rid of the baby. It means that you've taken, you know, you've understood, we have to purify. But you can't purify of everything. It's not that you're going to get rid of all sense activity, all variety, all love, all thought, all action. That's foolishness. The opposite of material senses and material form is spiritual senses and spiritual form. It's not voidism and it's not oneness without variety. So that's nirvishesha. So these Mayavadis, they cannot accommodate the existence of the senses. When he says account, he means accommodate. It means that they don't accept that we have senses in the ultimate reality. That's the idea. Okay, let us go on. Now we will see the result of this blowing of the conch shells. Oh, actually, we have some more blowing now. Three verses of blowing of conch shells. Ananda Vijayam Raja Kunti Putro Yudhishthira Nakula Sahadevascha Sugosha Manipushpako Kasyascha Padameshvasa Shikandi Chamaharataha Dvishchidhyumno Viratascha Satyakish Chaparajitaha Dubado Drapadeyascha Savasha Pritivipate Saubhadrascha Mahabahu Shankhan Dadbhu Patak Patak. King Yudhishthir, the son of Kunti, blew his conch shell, the Ananta Vijay. And Nakula and Sahadev blew the Sugosh and the Manipushpaka. That great archer, the king of Kashi, the great fighter Shikhandi, Drishtadyumna, Virata, the unconquerable Satyaki, Drupada, the sons of Draupadi, and the others, O king, such as the mighty armed son of Subhadra, all blew their respective conch shells. Do you have this latest edition? Page 45. We have to really get rid of all the old ones now. Purport. Sanjay informed King Dhritarashtra very tactfully that his unwise policy of deceiving the sons of Pandu and endeavoring to enthrone his own sons on the seat of the kingdom was not very laudable. The signs already clearly indicated that the whole Kuru dynasty would be killed in that great battle, beginning with the grandsire Bhishma, down to the grandsons like Abhimanyu and others, including the kings from many states of the world, all were present there, and all were doomed. The whole catastrophe was due to King Dhritarashtra, because he encouraged the policy followed by his sons. So it's like a great Greek tragedy or something, or Shakespearean tragedy, you know. I mean, this Dhritarashtra, he had the power at all times to stop the whole thing. But he was controlled totally by his son. He pleaded with his son, I was just reading some of the Mahabharata, to please give up this war, please give up this war. But he himself did not order them to give up the battle. You see what I'm saying? Dhritarashtra was pleading with his son to not fight, you know, to give the Pandavas their due. But he's the king. He doesn't have to plead. You know what I mean? But he was controlled by his affection for his son. He was under control of this. He was weak-willed. And so he became a tragic figure. All his sons were killed. He lost the kingdom. You know, ultimately he's saved by Vidura in the Bhagavatam. We'll read it. Okay, let's go on. Sagosho dhatarashtranam vidyani vyadariyat nabascha prativim chaiva tumalo vyanunadayan. Those who are interested in Sanskrit, there's so many roots of English in the Sanskrit. This tumalo is the same as tumult. It's the same exact word. Tumalo and tumult. The blowing of these different conch shells became uproarious, vibrating in the sky and on the earth. It shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. Purport. When Bhishma and the others on the side of Duryodhan blew their respective conch shells, there was no heartbreaking on the part of the Pandavas. Such occurrences are not mentioned, but in this particular verse it is mentioned that the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra were shattered by the sounds vibrated by the Pandavas' party. This is due to the Pandavas and their confidence in Lord Krishna. One who takes shelter of the Supreme Lord has nothing to fear, even in the midst of the greatest calamity. This is been proved again and again. There's one I was just reading on this dandavat.com. Now they have a new site. There's this one lady, devotee, who's been in prison now in Turkmenistan. It's one of these stands that used to belong to the Soviet Union. Yeah, so they're asking us to write letters to her. So you can write a letter and quote from this here. You know, is that devotees, sometimes they're just like Prahlad or others, you know, Haridas Thakur, they're attacked by the demons. But if you take full shelter of Krishna, then you're always protected. And you always feel confident of Krishna's protection. It's a very great thing in this dangerous world of ours, this age of Kali. Ata vyavastitan drishtva dhartarashtran kapidvajaha privitte shastra sampate dhunur udyamya pandavaha Rishikesham tadavakyam idamaha mahipate. At that time, Arjuna, the son of Pandu, seated on the chariot bearing the flag marked with Hanuman, took up his bow and prepared to shoot his arrows. O king, after looking at the sons of Dhritarashtra drawn in military array, Arjuna then spoke to Lord Krishna these words. So this is a key point. If he had just started shooting, then the battle would have started. But because he hesitated and asked Krishna to take the chariot between the armies, the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. Purport. The battle was just about to begin. It is understood from the above statement that the sons of Dhritarashtra were more or less disheartened by the unexpected arrangement of military force by the Pandavas, who were guided by the direct instructions of Lord Krishna on the battlefield. The emblem of Hanuman on the flag of Arjuna is another sign of victory, because Hanuman cooperated with Lord Ram in the battle between Ram and Ravana, and Lord Ram emerged victorious. Now both Ram and Hanuman were present on the chariot of Arjuna to help him. Lord Krishna is Ram himself, and wherever Lord Ram is, his eternal servitor Hanuman and his eternal consort Sita, the goddess of fortune, are present. Therefore, Arjuna had no cause to fear any enemies whatsoever. And above all, the Lord of the senses, Lord Krishna, was personally present to give him direction. Thus, all good counsel was available to Arjuna in the matter of executing the battle. In such auspicious conditions, arranged by the Lord for his eternal devotee, lay the signs of assured victory. It even mentions in the Bhagavatam how Krishna, although he didn't, you know, raise any weapons except that one time where he kind of took up a wheel to threaten Bhishma, he actually, you know, got into the minds of his, after all, he's in the hearts of everyone, of the enemy soldiers, and discouraged them, you know, and assured that they would lose. In other words, if you have Krishna on your side, you can't lose. Ultimately, you just have to be firm-willed, dhritavrata, have a firm vow to actually fight. And Krishna takes care. So we can see the battle. But of course, the key element is Arjuna has to be willing to fight. And if Arjuna doesn't fight this battle, then they're not going to win. So the key element is that Arjuna has to fight. And that's what happens now. He's covered by Krishna, and he has his weakness of heart. And so the whole Bhagavad Gita will be spoken in order to encourage him to fight. Any discussion on this? These points? Yeah.
Krishna was only going to drive the chariot and not be involved otherwise. Here it is directly instructing him how to arrange.
Yeah, I think what it means there, he's instructing them from within. He's guiding them from within. I think it's mentioned that Drishtadyumna actually was the one. That was the whole thing at the beginning here, that Duryodhana was a little bit disappointed in Dronacharya, that he had instructed Drishtadyumna, who's on Arjuna's side, and he had arranged, "Behold the great army of the sons of Pandu, so expertly arranged by your intelligent disciple, the son of Jupiter." The son of Jupiter was Drishtadyumna. And he was specifically empowered to kill Dronacharya, his own teacher. So the arrangement, the actual arrangement of the battle, phalanx and stuff, had been done by Drishtadyumna. But in one sense, you can say everything is inspired by Krishna. He's within the heart of both sides, you know, giving the side that he favors the intelligence to do battle, and the other side bewildering so they screw up. His promise was that he wouldn't fight, and so he's not taking up any weapons, you know. But of course, there's many ways of fighting, many ways of show. He's going to show favor to the side of the Pandavas. Yes.
Do you have senses in the spirit realm? Like, are they pure senses?
Yes.
What's going on there?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. We have like Swarup Siddhi, it's called. Swarup Siddhi or Siddha Swarup or Siddhadeya. Siddhadeya means the perfect body. This body we have is just a covering over our original body. And it's like a bad costume. In other words, we have different costumes. We have an original form that has senses, has mind, has everything. And it's perfectly suited to the kind of service that we want to render Krishna. And it's eternal. It doesn't decay. It's called avyayam. It means there's no time decay. We're eternally youthful. We have these eternal senses. And with those senses, we serve the Lord.
Where is it?
In the spiritual world. We have it now, but it's covered. We can't perceive it.
Is it in here?
Yes. It's inherent with the soul. The soul has a form. It's a form of spirit. Now it's covered by matter. So we do have that eternal form. And the whole process of bhakti is meant to awaken us to that form. We can become awakened to it even while in this body. And then and then when we leave this body, we'll be in the spiritual world eternally in that form.
So this confusion is coming from this material body?
Yes, it is.
It's confusing the soul inside.
It's covering the knowledge. The knowledge is covered. That's explained in the third chapter. And so that whole idea, like in the Bible, what does it say? Man is made in the image of God. So, you know, because Krishna has senses, that's why we have senses. You know, because he has eyes, therefore we have eyes. Yeah. So that's... Yeah, we have our material senses that are covered over the spiritual senses. But the senses become spiritualized when they're used in the service of Krishna. You know, that's the idea. It's not that this body will, you know, have our eternal form, but we can become aware of it. And so much goes on inside. You know, the great acharyas, they're serving the Lord in so many ways within, while externally they may just be, you know, walking down the street in Times Square. You know, but inside they're serving Krishna with their spiritual body. This is all explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita.
So is this coming from also the forgetfulness thing? Whenever we come into this material realm and we forget everything from before.
Yes.
And so the soul knows everything from
yes.
before, and so it's like has amnesia.
Yes, exactly. We're trying to remember what we have forgotten. Prabhupada was once asked by a reporter. You know, there was a lot of nice conversation with reporters because Prabhupada was a pretty amazing figure. You know, in the 60s and the 70s, here he was. You know, he started this movement and he was this you know, all of these Hare Krishnas, you know, in every city. And so reporters, he was a celebrity. And so they would ask him, you know, what have you come to teach? I think maybe this was in London. I forget, maybe in New York. And I've come to teach what you have forgotten. You know, it's a key. I've come to teach what you have forgotten. Very key element. You know, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadhya Kabaroya. It means we have this Nitya Siddha, eternal perfection of prema, which is what the senses are all about. You know, serving Krishna, loving him with the senses. Is there. Shravanadishuddha Chitta Kariyehu Doi. By purifying the heart or the consciousness through hearing, chanting, etc., all the processes of devotional service, hearing the holy name, chanting the holy name, that love is awakened. And when that love is awakened, simultaneously our awareness of our real form is also awakened. Yeah. Okay.
So the body isn't really going through this, kind of, but we're walking through it, the amnesia soul is going through something, right?
He's waking up, hopefully. The body is a temporary covering that eventually will fall away. But then what will be left is our consciousness.
So there's not two things really going on, something to the body and consciousness. And because sometimes I'm thinking about this, and I'm thinking about that soul as like a completely separate thing.
Well, the soul is completely separate from the body, but we're kind of mixed up with it because we're tied to it, we're attached to it, we're identified with it. We're identifying with it. As soon as we stop identifying with it, and then we can deal with it as just a tool rather than as us. You know, it's the whole thing. Okay, one more set of verses here. So, Arjuna Vacha, Sena Yodabhyo Madhye Ratam Stapya Mechita. Did we? Yeah. Yavat Etan Nidiksheham Yodhu Kaman Avastitan Karmaya Sahayodhavyam Asmin Rana Samudyame. Arjun said, O infallible one, please draw my chariot between the two armies so that I may see those present here who desire to fight and with whom I must contend in this great trial of arms. Purport. Although Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, out of his causeless mercy he was engaged in the service of his friend. He never fails in his affection for his devotees, and thus he is addressed herein as infallible. As charioteer, He had to carry out the orders of Arjuna, and since he did not hesitate to do so, he is addressed as infallible. Although he had accepted the position of a charioteer for his devotee, his supreme position was not challenged. In all circumstances, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Rishikesha, the Lord of the total senses. The relationship between the Lord and his servitor is very sweet and transcendental. The servitor is always ready to render service to the Lord, and similarly, the Lord is always seeking an opportunity to render some service to the devotee. He takes greater pleasure in his pure devotees assuming the advantageous position of ordering him than he does in being the giver of orders. Since he is master, everyone is under his orders, and no one is above him to order him. But when he finds that a pure devotee is ordering him, he obtains transcendental pleasure, although he is the infallible master in all circumstances. As a pure devotee of the Lord, Arjuna had no desire to fight with his cousins and brothers, but he was forced to come onto the battlefield by the obstinacy of Duryodhana, who was never agreeable to any peaceful negotiation. Therefore, he was very anxious to see who the leading persons present on the battlefield were. Although there was no question of a peacemaking endeavor on the battlefield, he wanted to see them again and to see how much they were bent upon demanding an unwanted war. So the devotees of the Lord are never really inclined to do battle just for battle's sake. They're not warlike. They're always peaceful. And if you read the history of the Mahabharata, you see that every effort was made to negotiate a peace with Duryodhana, but he refused. He was hell-bent on this war. He really coveted it because he wanted to get rid of the Pandavas. He saw them as the great threat to the kingdom. Therefore, as a last resort, you know, they have this thing called a war of choice or a war of necessity. A war of choice is when you start it. Is when it's a war of choice. We choose to fight in order to expand our kingdom or do whatever. But a war of necessity is when someone attacks you or there's an obvious threat and you fight back. That's a just war. The good war, everyone said World War II was a good war. You know, incarnate evil in the form of Hitler was there, you know, with the Nazis and so forth. So, okay, it was a good war. We won't get into modern politics, but this was a good war. This was a just war on the side of the Pandavas. And that's why it says at the very end, wherever there's Arjuna, wherever there's Krishna, there was sure to be victory, opulence, morality, and great heroism, I think. Yatra yogeshira Krishna, yatra paradadruvatata shi vijaya bhutir duva niti matimima. And opulence, victory, morality, those type of things. So it's not that just Arjuna likes to fight. He doesn't like to fight, and that's proved by what happens right after, which we'll deal with tomorrow, and that he suddenly sees all of his friends, he sees his relatives, Bhishma on the other side, and he says, I can't do it, you know, I don't want to fight. Why should I have, this kingdom will be soaked with the blood of my friends and relatives. Rather, let me go off to the forest and become a beggar. So this is the sets up the speaking of the whole Bhagavad Gita. Any final comments or questions? Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.